The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is a numbers game here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown in for the one, the only Gil Alexander, alongside Kelly Bidlin, rocking and rolling. All kinds of stuff happening here on this show.
Got a lot going.
Talk some punch face with John Anik a little bit later.
That's right.
Some ice soccer with Jonathan Davis.
Punch face and ice soccer.
We got some animal NASCAR with Chris Felica a little bit later. We got all kinds of stuff going on the show.
Things Matt Brown does to prep for the show.
Hey, listen, man, it's going to be fun. Of course, Jonathan Von Tobel going to step in and talk some NBA with us a little bit later as well. So, an action-packed, stacked show.
What? Nothing fun for the NBA? Like they used to put
Ball.
Yeah, I was going to say they used to score like in peach basket.
There we go. peach basket throwing your side. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't have anything. And see, look, you put me on the spot there. And I didn't have anything for that.
Sorry, I ruined your 30-minute prep session on that this morning.
It was more like 45 minutes, just to let you know. We do have the Stanley Cup Finals that are going to be happening and starting tonight. We'll talk, like we said, Jonathan Davis a little bit later. If you're wondering, Edmonton Oilers are -135 now at DraftKings. At home here in game number one, +115. If you want the Panthers on the road as underdogs, 6.5. The total there in that one, it is shaded towards the under. If you want to play the puck line, the Oilers -1.5 is at +180. So we will cover all of that with JD a little bit later. Kelly and I are not going to sit here and try and pretend like we can give you a ton of insight into this one. That's why we bring on the experts.
Absolutely. That's why we bring on the experts. Have you made any bets in the Stanley Cup final at all?
Yes.
You have?
Oilers in 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Getting frisky with it.
It was just an Oilers in 5.
Oilers in 5.
Just so I have something to root for.
I'm going to be involved too. Yeah. I love Jay Khan. I don't know that he necessarily swayed me over to a particular side. So maybe Jonathan Davis can do that today. But yeah, I mean,
just want to get something.
It's the Stanley Cup final. I'm going to have something going. Come on.
It's going to be on a TV.
Right.
Like when you have multiple TVs, it's going to be on a TV for sure. Yeah. So again, we will get that all taken care of here throughout the course of the show. So stick around as always. I know Gil's not in here, but if you want to tweet us at the show, you can at Matt Brown M2, at Kelly Bidlin. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention yesterday. Appreciate all of the outpouring, all of the love over my, you know what? It was called a monologue by somebody. So I'm not going to say rant. I'm going to say monologue.
That's exactly what it was.
That's
exactly what it was. Yes, it was a monologue.
Yeah. I'm not going to go with rant. It was kind of a rant. It was rantish.
You have to speak loudly for the people to hear, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay. And people need to hear those types of things about the future of sports betting.
So talk about what was going on in Illinois. By the way, Derek Stevens did join the guys on Follow the Money a little bit later in the day to talk from the book standpoint on all that. Both of those clips are over on VSiN Live on the Twitter machine if you want to take a look at those. But the big news yesterday, Kelly Bidlin in the NBA side of things. And by the way, it has nothing to do with the finals. It is that Tom Thibodeau was fired by the New York Knicks. He led this Knicks team to back-to-back 51 seasons for the first time since 1995. The direct quote, so forgive me as I look down at my computer, but I want to make sure that I do this correctly. Our organization is singularly focused on winning a championship for our fans. This is Leon Rose, the team president. The pursuit led us to the decision to inform Tom Thibodeau that we've decided to move in another direction. We can't thank Tom enough for pouring his heart and soul into each and every day of being the New York Knicks head coach. Ultimately, we made the decision we feel is best for our organization moving forward. Tom will always be a part of our Knicks family, and we truly wish him nothing but the best in the future. So Kelly Bidlin, the New York Knicks, found a way to dominate the news cycle yesterday, despite the fact that they didn't make it to the NBA Finals. But listen, it's the biggest market in the country, so I do understand. Lots of takes that are coming out. Some people think it's foolish. Some people think it was warranted. And all I have to say in all of this is I don't know enough about the nuances that goes into NBA coaching. But what I can say is sometimes a fresh start is what you need. And you knew what you were getting when you hired Tibbs. The way that he coaches, the style that he coaches is well documented. Everybody from you and I to anyone with eyes, you can look at the statistics on the page. He runs his top five out there. He plays the top five more than anybody in the history of the league in the modern era. You know, since I'm going to call the modern era, since we basically started resting players and making sure that they were fresh for the playoffs and the finals and stuff like that. And you know, Kelly, I look at this and curious as to what you think, that you can't make a big trade today. You can't overhaul this roster today, but you can decide that you're going to move in a new direction with the coach today. And so mm-hmm. I think the Knicks just looked at it and said, hey, listen, we're going to have to do something regardless in the offseason. If we're really going to make a push, we can't do any of that today. But what we can do is change the philosophy, change the style, and change maybe the culture of what we have going on in that locker room. And so we're going to move in a different direction from a coaching standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it completely. Look, this was, I said a week ago, I said a couple weeks ago up here, I don't think that a couple things weren't out of possibilities yet, when that was the Knicks firing Tom Thibodeau or the Oklahoma City Thunder being involved in the Giannis Antetokounmpo sweepstakes. I don't think any of those can be ruled out unless one of those teams wins the NBA Finals. So that was Knicks losing the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think this should be a surprise to anybody. I guess I'm a little shocked at how stunned some of the New York media seems, because they were the ones reporting basically all season long, and especially heading into the playoffs, talking about him being on the hot seat. And I think we've seen in the NBA now, at least in recent years, some of this doesn't matter. Some of these teams have made up their minds beforehand of what they're going to do. I mean, Mike Malone got ousted in Denver. Like, this is not even close to the worst, you know, firing if we're going to go there of a head coach this season. Mike Malone, who built Nikola Jokic into the MVP player that he is, got shown the door in Denver. So I don't know. I'm not really shocked with this. I think you are absolutely on point with there's not much they can do with this roster right now, and I do not blame Tibbs for that at all. I think there is some front office and ownership issues that are always going to be in the way when we talk about New York Knicks and the New York Knicks and decisions that they make with the roster.
Which will go into the next coach talk as well, right? Because you look here and you see, like, Malone is the short shot, and you see some of those guys, but, like, do they want to work for Dolan? And, I mean, that mm-hmm. that's going to be – because Malone will get another job somewhere,
yes.
right? And, like, so he is not worried about getting a job. He's not one of those coaches where he's going to have to take the first thing that's offered to him, right? It's going to come down to some of these dudes are going to go, man, it's kind of tempting. It's New York, and it's a decent roster and all the stuff like that, but boy, I don't want to have to deal with what's going on upstairs.
Yeah, absolutely, and a lot of these guys, and I know we were showing it before on screen, if you're watching at home, some of the next head coach odds that are out there, a lot of these guys already have relationships with the Knicks that go back in the past, and so you don't even know if you want to work there. Some of the past is going to come into play, too, and then I think you got to step back and look at the roster and say, how good is this roster good enough to win an NBA Finals? And I've got major questions about that right now, Matt. I mean, yes, you're going to be in a weaker Eastern Conference next year. The divide between the West and the East is going to grow even bigger next year. And the Knicks should be still a top three team in the East. But is it good enough to go out there and beat an Oklahoma City Thunder team like we're talking about all this week? And I don't even think they're close. So as far as these next head coach odds, I don't know how realistic it is, Matt, but there's one name I think that the Knicks are starting with and should start with, and he's a guy that's been talked a lot about. I mean, it's a big-name coach, but he's a guy that's gotten a lot of credit for what he did with the Clippers this past season and the Celtics last year in different assistant and consulting roles, and that is Jeff Van Gundy. I mean, players, the outcry from players on the Clippers this year and the Celtics last year of how much Jeff Van Gundy came in and instantly helped both of those teams and helped get the Celtics to an NBA championship a year ago and the Clippers to as far as they did this year. That's one that I'm really interested to see if that could possibly be a return to New York.
For the radio audience out there, Malone +125, Johnny Bryant 4-1, Jay Wright, Mike Budenholzer, Rick Brunson, all 15-1. Monty Williams, Taylor Jenkins, John Calipari, Dan Hurley, all 20-1. And then Jeff Van Gundy at 25-1. The only one that really stands out to me is Mike Malone, and that's the one I'd say is I don't like that price at all. Again,
no,
you have a guy that gets fired because he was arguing with the front office. Like in Denver, do you really want to go into a situation where you know it's a difficult? I don't think, again, he's going to get hired somewhere else mm-hmm. anyway. It doesn't matter. He didn't have to go to New York. Do you want to put yourself in a situation that you're going to be in maybe even more difficult than what was going on there in Denver? And if you believe what you hear behind the scenes, it was because he kept butting heads with ownership and the GM and also that's going to be the same situation with the Knicks.
I mean, like, if you're a Knicks fan or a Knicks backer out there, here the good news is, look, the NBA's gotten so ridiculous with how quickly they fire coaches and tend to lean to players. There's a lot of quality names on this. I mean, we're talking about multiple Coach of the Year winners that are out there looking for jobs. You went with Taylor Jenkins, Monty Williams, Mike Budenholzer, Mike Malone. Like, I really can't blame you if you went with any of those. I think they could all do a good job. Yeah,
absolutely. So we are, of course, watching what's going on over at Roland Garros. Coco Gauff does advance. She lost the first set in a tiebreaker to Maddie Keys, but then came back 6-4, 6-1 and wins. By the way, as we're walking in, Boisson takes it down.
I know. I actually,
everyone giving her no chance.
As I was walking in,
pop the champagne, eat your croissants over there in France. Boisson moves on.
As I was walking in, she had just taken the first set, and I go, Mira Andreeva, live bet, let's go. And that did not work out.
She is celebrating with a Nutella crepe.
In the monster croissants they got out.
Yeah,
the monster ones. I did get a message from Gil about 20 minutes ago. I forgot about this goes back to April 17th, and I think Louise Boisson was the last leg of a massive parlay that was supposed to hit for Amanda. He lost, or she lost, and that cost him a good amount of money. And now this is happening today at the French Open. I think he's losing his mind right now.
Carlos Alcaraz just waxed Tommy Paul 0-1-4 to reach the semis. So
he's
that,
good.
He's a pretty good tennis player. So we'll hit the Major League Baseball slate whenever we come back, and also get into some more NBA prop markets as well for the finals. It is a numbers game here on a Wednesday.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is a numbers game here on a Wednesday. Matt in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin on the desk here. Got a lot to get through this segment before we are joined by John Anik next segment to talk UFC 316. So, Kelly, right into it here. Some news from yesterday. The Rockies. We're going to have to change the follow the money promo because I heard it on the way in today, and they were saying, when are the Rockies going to win a series? Yesterday.
There it is.
We got to change the promo. They're behind the glass. Got to change the follow the money.
I don't even know how many times he's betted, but I know JVT's bet on the Rockies the past 2 days. So good for him.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it 2 days ago, and then yesterday, they were only like -145, -150 dogs in that game, which for them is because we're seeing massive numbers against them, right? Like so, but their pitching matchup lined up pretty well against the Marlins. Kind of bad part of the pitching line. Anyway, they secure their first win of the series yesterday. So they end their historic drought. That was their first series win since, of course, last season. We said happy Paul Skeens day. It was happy for everybody, basically, except for Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens goes 8 innings, only allows 3 hits, only walks 1. He strikes out 8 guys, and he lost because the Pirates are so terrible at hitting the baseball. To be fair, Lance McCullers did at least look a little bit like Lance McCullers. He gets his first win since 2022. He goes 6 innings of 2-hit baseball, 7 Ks with only 1 walk. We know a big thing with McCullers is his control issues. So he got that down in that game. But again, you go 8 innings, you only give up 3 hits, you only walk 1, you strike out 8, a guy an inning, and you lose.
I don't know that there's anything more painful to watch in Major League Baseball than when you have some of these teams with Sandy Alcantara, probably a good example in the past with the Marlins, right? Yeah. Like, dominant pitchers who get absolutely no run support at all, or even just support from their organization, because like Paul Skeens, like, probably get used to it, right? Yeah. You're probably going to have multiple of these types of outings every single season while you're in Pittsburgh.
We talked about the Royals, where they had scored the second fewest runs in all of Major League Baseball to that Rockies team. So what do? They call up Jack Caglione. They score 10 runs. He must have hit 3 homer. 0 for 5. But they scored 10 runs. So it was just him being in the lineup fired him up.
Hey, he had a really, really long flyout, I saw. Okay, It almost got there.
You know, 0 for 5, but they scored 10 runs. So, I mean, like, it all worked out.
Like the New York Knicks, sometimes their locker room just needs a new burst of energy.
Yeah, a little pump in there. And so we'll see what goes on with him. But yes, 0 for 5 for him. Jazz Chisholm returned from the IL. He's been out since April the 29th. He homers for the Yankees, so they get a boost there in that lineup. Bryce Harper back in the lineup for the Phillies after missing about a week, he got hit by a pitch and was wondering if he was going to have to do an IL stint. Case that was not the case, and he also hit a homer whenever he came back as well. Both of our overs hit last night, Kelly Bidlin. So
yeah, you did. Look at you.
2-0 day there in Major League Baseball. Real quick, guys.
Are you perfect on the week on a numbers game so far?
We're perfect. Wow. We have not lost. We have not lost so far. So we'll have a couple today, probably. But, you know, can't win them all, as we say. Let's real quick, just kind of like what's going on out there in baseball. I know it's hard to keep up. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. Kind of the who's hot, who's not right now. The Red Sox in that not category. They are 2-8 in their last 10. They have not been getting it done. Frustration mounting there. Cora actually speaking out about his team and how poorly they are playing. The A's are 1-9 in their last 10 after a good April for this A's team. They were a little bit feisty. They have now settled back in as one of the worst teams in all of baseball. They've lost 8 straight games. The Braves, Giants, and Diamondbacks all 3-7 in their last 10 games. And the Diamondbacks have actually won 2 in a row. They have been 1-9 in their trailing 10 games. So they are in a real funk right now as well. On the good side of things, Yankees, Rays, and Orioles, all three of these AL East teams are 7-3 in their last 10. The Tigers and Astros also 7-3 in their last 10. Over in the NL, Mets, Cubs, and Brewers all 8-2 in their last 10 games. Padres 7-3 in their last 10. And Kelly, if you look at the standings, only one game behind the Dodgers in the NL West. Now, you look at run differential, plus 80 to plus 18, but still only one game back there for this Padres team chasing the Dodgers.
80's better.
80 is better than 18.
I believe in the long-term success of the team that's plus 80.
Yeah. Well, because they're not sweating games late.
Right. Yeah,
like, that's the thing. They're coasting to wins as opposed to, like, nail-biters at the end.
Yeah. I mean, that's it feels like a couple years now, but it's like the NL West would be really, really interesting if the Dodgers weren't there.
Yeah, it didn't exist. Yeah. That said, I mean, listen, hey, Padres, keep winning. Make it fun for us at least into the dog days.
I mean, we talked to Mark Borchardt yesterday. He's still been high on the Diamondbacks all year. I've heard some extra love for the Giants still not being a complete sleeper out there. It's a good division.
Fenway wind blowing out to left center today, guys, and it's nearly 90 degrees. So if you want to play some home run props there in that game. Wind blown out again in Sacramento, blowing out to left in Tampa, but there is some possible showers. Also in St. Louis, some weather as well. So just as you are making either your bets or DFS lineups or whatever it might be, just make sure that that weather has cleared out there for all of them. We have some morning baseball today. Well, morning for us, day baseball for everybody else. Brewers and the Reds. I'm playing the Reds at minus 117. I have been backing Andrew Abbott for this Reds team over and over and over and over again. I also took him over 4.5 strikeouts in this game as well for Abbott. You go in, and Kelly, this guy is actually legit real deal here. I know some of these small sample size stuff and you worry about what you're getting from some of these pitchers, but Andrew Abbott, to me, if you kind of watch, you look at the underlying stats as well, surface statistics tell us that he's a 151 ERA pitcher. Well, that's obviously not the case, but he is about a mid threes dude. And if you actually look at the XERA, 3.05. And so that is very, very real. Also a 28% K rate for him, still with a sub 10% walk rate. So I'm playing Abbott today against the Brewers in some day baseball. Also playing the Phillies against the Jays today. It was minus 105 when I got it, but I believe that number has been on the move. So
let's see. I've got Phillies minus 107 to 112.
Yeah. So not terrible. Not terrible. But Mick Abel is a guy that you probably never heard of unless you pay attention to baseball a ton. But one of their big prospects, he came up, actually made a start a couple of weeks ago, was absolutely fantastic. He's been carving up AAA down there. He gets the call to come back up and play against the Blue Jays. And this is as much a play on Mick Abel as it is a play against Jose Berríos, who I absolutely love fading at any and all opportunities when I'm getting a decent price on that. As we mentioned, Bryce Harper back in that lineup for this Phillies team as well, which only makes them a little bit more potent. So give me the Phillies on the road behind Mick Abel, going up against the Blue Jays as well. Now, Kelly, while we have some time here, I do want to get some thoughts on you because you are playing the prop market in the NBA Finals. I know that you have a 3-point prop. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I've made a couple of these. I keep kind of digging into this more and more each day and running out of time to add bets here as the NBA Finals does start tomorrow. But yeah, some of the series leader markets, I think these are always interesting to look at. Sometimes you can find some value in them, sometimes not, and that's fine. I thought we had a good conversation, though, yesterday with Drew Dinsick about just kind of, you know, approaching these differently if you do think this is going to be a short series, and I do. I think it's going to be Thunder. We're looking Thunder 5. I've already bet that 4-1 exact score. You know, it could be 4. I think it could be a sweep. And I think if you're looking at that, if you're looking at a shorter series, there's more value in betting some of the longer shots, whether you're talking finals MVP, whether you're talking markets like this, because of less games that happen, you could have one or two outlier performances by one of the longer shots, and they're in play to steal this. I think a good example is just a series ago, Anthony Edwards leading that series in rebounds for between Minnesota and Oklahoma City. So I did get involved in a couple of these. For threes, I did bet Lu Dort at 6-1. Look, going into this, Halliburton's a big favorite for three-pointers. I think as far as how we see the games played, it's going to be even more threes from the Pacers than what we normally see from this team, just because I think they're going to really struggle, Matt, getting inside, running effective offense against this Thunder defense. Thunder are going to push them further out. I think they're going to be launching up some threes. So you're probably going to get some more attempts from Halliburton, even than what we're used to. I think he's the rightful favorite, but Lu Dort on the other side, he is going to draw the weakest defensive matchup on the Pacers side every time they're down on that side of the floor. That's usually going to be Tyrese Halliburton. I think the way that the Thunder run offense, you're going to see a lot of open looks from Lu Dort. Dort has 6.4 3-point attempts is what he's averaging during the playoffs. It's 7.1 for Halliburton. Dort would be second, though, in just attempts between these two teams. Neesmith and Jalen Williams come in at third and fourth at 5.4 and 5.3 respectively. So you're going to get the volume there. And I like the chances of him being able to get that. A 6-1, I think that's a good number. I don't think Neesmith should be shorter than Dort there especially. So bet that 6-1. And then most assist market, I did make a bet there as well. I'm going SGA. This is really just a bet, and you can get him about 4-1 or a little bit higher than that right now. We're seeing 5-1 over at DraftKings. Great number on that bet. Same sort of thing, right, Matt? Like, I think this is only Halliburton or SGA that ends up winning this for most assists, the two main dominant ball handlers for both teams. But if the Pacers are not able to run effective offense and it turns into a lot more Halliburton chucking up long threes and being forced to shoot, I think there's a lot of value on an SGA number of 5-1.
Many blowouts, too. You might see Halliburton on the bench,
yep,
right? And so fewer minutes for him as well in the game. So all of those, again, will be recapped over on the VSiN.com/picks page. UFC 316 with John Anik when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, and I will waste no time, as we will have a ton to talk about here with my friend and yours, the voice of the Octagon, the host of the Anik and Florian podcast at John_Anik, and he is in fact John Anik. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing well. Pay-per-view week. It's good to be with you guys. It's been a while.
It has definitely been a while. I was sitting here as we were getting ready to come on air, and I started thinking last night, I was like, man, when did me and John first cross paths? And I was like, man, that was like 17, 18 years ago now at this point. For those of you that don't know, old school John Anik came up in the poker streets,
right,
Kelly,
that's
over
right
there at ESPN before transferring over into the MMA world. And I met John way back at the Bluff Magazine days and the poker days. And so, as
wow
you said, our career are exactly the same.
Here I am going to say it on air.
Here I am filling in for somebody else. And John Anik, rich, famous, got his podcast, got his own brand
come
of stuff.
On.
And well, look at this guy over here.
Well, and one thing I wasn't going to say on air, which I said in our little pre-show meeting, was that you're aging like Benjamin Button, and my beard is white, and I shave my head because I have a white wiffle up top. But here we are, yeah, 17, 18 years later, and crazy to think about fighting for mixed martial arts and poker,
yeah,
in Bristol, Connecticut at ESPN in 2006 and 2007 when a lot of people internally didn't want to give either of those particular sports, if you can call poker that, any sort of cup of tea. So, yeah, mixed martial arts, still with work to do, I think, domestically, but we have come far since 07, my man.
Yeah, man, it was something else. You got the repping the Fuel TV shirt. Absolutely. Absolutely love it. The only thing I got on you is the hair. That's all I got. That's the only thing I got on you. That's a.
What's interesting? Kenny Florian broke the news on our podcast this week that he is going to Turkey this weekend to get a hair transplant, right? And his podcast co-host, me, has a full head of hair that I've been shaving by choice for 31 years, juxtaposed against my twin brother, who oftentimes has it grown out to his waistline. So, yeah, different strokes for different folks, but I have always been on the other side of things, you know. But I could grow a full head. I'm just not as handsome as you.
I like it. I like it, buddy. So let's get to the main event here, in which we get the rematch between Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili. And this is, from an odds perspective, way, way different than we saw in the first fight. I was all over Merab in the first fight, given the odds that we were getting. Now he's all the way out minus 325 in this thing. You're getting about plus 260 on the other side with Sean. I mean, of course, we get the injury news from O'Malley coming out afterwards there, John. I don't know how much you do buy into all of that. Then we get the news, hey, listen, he's taking this much more seriously. Him and his coach have both come out and said that they are looking at this. They felt humbled after that first fight. Hell, he quit smoking pot and everything else. He feels like he's more focused in this thing. So what do you think that we see here in this main event?
Well, I think the first meeting was closer than I think the post-fight narrative suggested. Sean O'Malley did have moments in that fight. And, you know, Kenny Florian, my podcast co-host, with a very keen eye, did, upon rewatch, give Sean O'Malley two rounds. Now, Merab's dominant rounds were certainly dominant. I think the issue for Sean may just be that the opponent here, the champion, has also made adjustments, has also gotten better, has also gotten more confident, and also now has 25 minutes against you, having felt you, to try to see if he can spin it forward to the positive. But I expect a better Sean O'Malley, to be sure. It's been a far more grappling and wrestling intensive training camp. And I think mentally, you know, say what you want about the cannabis, or, you know, that he doesn't masturbate anymore, mm-hmm. and that he's diving into family and away from social media, all of these things. I think ultimately it's going to be about the work and the cardiovascular base and creating a moment early on in this fight that maybe changes the complexion, because the man with whom he is dealing, I think a lot of your audience understands this. Merab Dvalishvili is a machine. Even his teammates suggest he's not like a regular human. So it's a daunting task for Sean, but if you're asking me if I see value on that side, I do.
In the women's co-main event here, we're looking at Juliana Pena and Kayla Harrison. This is massive, you know, minus 600-ish range, something like that on Harrison. You're getting back 440, 450, something like that on Pena, despite the fact that she's the one with the belt in this thing. And John, you know, we bet numbers sometimes, and not necessarily a dollar for a dollar. You're always betting Kayla Harrison. Like, if you're getting a dollar for a dollar, no matter what, you know, you're getting over 4.5 to 1 if you're betting Pena in this thing. Is there a world that exists in which Pena, with the experience, now we have seen Kayla Harrison go to decision and lose, and that's actually wasn't at the beginning of her career or anything. I mean, that was well into her career. So we have seen her lose a five rounder before. Can Pena drag this into the deep waters? Can she get this thing and make it ugly somehow? Test the cardio, test the gas tank, get into the championship rounds, and maybe steal a couple?
Absolutely. If anyone can, it is Juliana Pena. And look no further than what she was able to do against Amanda Nunes in sort of walking through punishment and producing singularly one of the biggest wins in mixed martial arts history. If this fight was happening at featherweight, and let us be clear, Juliana Pena is not a featherweight, but if it was happening at featherweight, Matt, Kayla Harrison would be like minus 1,200. Mm-hmm. So the fight before the fight is a huge part of this. And the notion that Kayla Harrison, despite her world-class decorated nature as an athlete and a two-time Olympic champion, the notion that she's going to be able to make 135 pounds five, six times in defending this title, I just don't believe it. So if you're looking to bet Kayla Harrison, right? And again, yeah, to save a dog's life, yeah, we're all probably on the Kayla Harrison side, right? But if you're looking to bet Kayla Harrison, I would certainly wait and watch Friday and see how that sort of evaporates and expires before I'd be racing to the window. Juliana Pena is an absolute dog, and that is trite phraseology, Matt, when it comes to MMA, right? Yeah, she's an absolute savage, but bro, she absolutely is. She's confident in herself. She feels like she's around the right training partners, Bilal Muhammad, Mike Valley commanding that entire training camp. You know, I'd love to come on here, you know, as a non-play-by-play announcer and be like, bro, she's live, plus 500. I'm just telling you that when the going gets tough, the last thing she's looking for is a way out. And I think that would be encouraging for anyone on the Peña side.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way that I look at this fight. Given the number that we're getting, I think there's only one way that I could go as a bettor, and that would be on the side of the dog. Of course, talking to John Anik here. You already know the voice, but I will let you know. Yes, it is, in fact, John Anik that we have on the program here. So let's go a little bit further down the card here, and we see Patchy Mix. And people who are not familiar with Patchy Mix, getting thrown into the deep end here, into a pay-per-view, making his debut. Certainly a guy that is an exciting fighter in all this. John, what can people expect from him in the octagon?
I absolutely love this fight. So Patchy Mix has come in and suggested that he is the best submission guy in this division. And you'd be hard to argue otherwise. In terms of pedigree, he comes in as credentialed as any UFC newcomer, certainly in recent memory and maybe of all time, decorated former Bellator champion. I think superlatively for me, it's just the way teammates and training partners and high-level fighters speak about him that jumps off the film or out of the page or out of the room for me. So I'm excited to see him compete on this stage. I don't think he'll be daunted by it. You know, Mario Bautista quietly has won 7 fights in a row at 135 pounds. His strength of schedule hasn't really been great up until the Jose Aldo win. I know a lot of people, the handicappers on the Anik and Florian podcast, absolutely love Patchy Mix at anything below minus 200 where he resides right now. I just love the confidence. I love the pedigree. I love that he's engaged to Tatiana Suarez. He is so married to the game. And, you know, he trains and is ready 24/7, 365. So he's ready to fight a guy who is certainly top 10 in the UFC. I can't wait to see Patchy Mix on this platform. Great human being, great fighter. Trains with Merab Dwalishvili. And hey, man, if Merab and Patchy both win this weekend, it might be teammate versus teammate in the not-too-distant future. We'll see.
Vicente Luque and Kevin Holland are going to kick things off on the pay-per-view card. Is there anything here to say other than let's just root for violence?
It's going to be great. It really is. And it's sort of hard to believe, just given the near 50 fights between them in the UFC, that they haven't shown up in each other's bracket until this fight. I love Kevin Holland at welterweight. Now, as a human being and in a broad sense, I like when guys compete more closely to their natural weight class. And that would be 85, I guess, for Kevin Holland. And he likes to sort of live his life as a middleweight. But he can realize great success as a welterweight, and I think he could present a lot of different problems with his frame and just his unorthodox nature for a guy like Vicente Luque. And Luque, while meat and potatoes, man, you know, it's like Wagyu beef and like some nicely fried crisp potatoes, you know. So Vicente Luque has got a lot of different weapons in his arsenal as well. You know, both come in and find Fettle having won their last fight. So, you know, great way to kick off the pay-per-view. You know, anytime the play-by-play guy says that this is a monster pay-per-view, people are like, yeah, all right, dude, you know, you're selling the fight. But I'm telling you, like, I can't wait to get to The Rock Saturday night.
We got about 30 seconds here, John. I'm not going to ask you about your Red Sox and what's going on there or whatever, but how excited are you about the Patriots? And how excited are you about the Patriots, though? Come on, that was a good offseason.
Well, I mean, a lot of pressure on Drake May. I mean, you think there's pressure on Patchy Mix this weekend, Matt. There's a lot of pressure on Drake May because what they have done foundationally around him in terms of infrastructure and player development, player acquisitions, and then, of course, Mike Vrabel. By the way, I'll leave you with this. Mike Vrabel, of all the celebrities I've met, was the least excited to meet me of anyone. And I love it, right? I love that the Patriots head coach didn't enjoy meeting me at all, right? Because he's hard-nosed. He's no nonsense. What does he care about meeting an announcer? But my stage manager, Niner, brought him over, you know, because I'm a Patriots fan. He couldn't care less.
Absolutely awesome. You still owe me a round of golf and some drinks next time you're back in Vegas, buddy. Thanks for dropping by. To John Anik, catch him this week, UFC 316.
Thank you, guys.
When we come back, let's talk some hockey with Jonathan Davis.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A numbers game, Matt, in for Gil. A quick reminder, guys, sharpplays.com. Head on over there, powered by Cutting Edge AI. They got some inside sources over there as well. Free betting reports, real-time alerts, market-moving insights. That is sharpplays.com, S-H-A-R-P-P-L-A-Y-S.com. Trusted by pros and watched by the books. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin in here, and we go right from punch face into ice soccer.
That's right, punch face to ice soccer. By the way, AI is better than KI. That's what powers this show, Kelly Intelligence.
Okay.
You should go with AI.
Did you just patent that?
Yeah, I just patented it.
Yeah, is that in the Veasan store? Can you get a mug with that on it? No, can't do that. Can't order a mug with that thing on it.
I don't think so.
Little polo with like on the pocket. You'd have like powered by KI. No, yeah, well, hey.
Make it happen, Marino.
Run with it, buddy. I was going to say, you run with it. Now joining us here, Jonathan Davis, our very own hockey expert, going to break things down as we get going here tonight. Jonathan, how you doing, buddy? You got to be excited.
I'm doing well. Kelly, can I get that at the App Store?
Yes, of course you can, Jonathan. It's available now, obviously. Yeah, you just download it.
Here's the funny thing.
It's called texting. Okay. It's just called texting me. There you go.
I could probably type it like something. There's already Kelly Intelligence.
Yeah,
I know if we Googled it right now, I'd be.
But they probably spell it wrong, Matt. That would be my bet.
It'd be all over the place. Of course, find Jonathan's full written article over on VEASAN.com, but we want to get all your verbal stuff here so you can add some context to all of this at West Coast HKY over on the Twitter machine as well. Jonathan, as we sit right now, moving into how this is going to kick off tonight, it opened up a coin flip, seems to have moved a little bit on the series price towards Edmonton. Do you agree with that move? How did that all come down whenever the prices first hit for you?
Yeah, guys. I mean, I agree with the move. I would have been surprised if it went the other way. I mean, I think that's probably the best, you know, for me, that's the way I would look at it. I'd be surprised if the road team in this case was favored. And, you know, no, look, now, look, the narrative last year was that Edmonton's now got to make that trip from Alberta to Florida to get ready for game one. Now it's the reverse. The Oilers have been really good at home. The Panthers have been really good everywhere. I mean, look, the Panthers are the best road team in the playoffs this year. They're 8-2 on the road. They've outscored their opponents by, I think, over a 2-1 margin. So it's not going to be a walk in the park. But conversely, Edmonton's only lost one home game in the playoffs. They're 6-1.
Jonathan, anything, any huge advantage just when we talk game one, besides Edmonton being at home, do you expect either one of these teams to be a little bit feistier earlier in the series maybe than late?
I think the Oilers are far better prepared this time around than they were a year ago. Last year, it was like, oh my God, we've made it to the final. You know, it was just the giddiness of being there. And I think this year, you know, Connor McDavid is just, and Leon Draisaitl, they're two top players, just seem laser focused. It was, you know, very, very businesslike after they eliminated the Dallas Stars in game five and then advanced to the Cup final. This is like become, I don't know, a business trip for them, although they are starting the business trip at home. I think it's an important game, more of an important game for Edmonton to win tonight than it is for Florida, simply for Edmonton just to feel, you know, better about themselves. Florida, like they just, I don't think either team buckles to any pressure. Both these teams have been on the brink of elimination at, you know, in one series in the playoffs. Edmonton in round one against LA, you know, down 2-0 and trailing in the third period of game three. Florida down 2-0 in round two to Toronto, down 2-0 and 3-1 before winning in overtime. I mean, they were a goal away from being, you know, down 3-0 in that series. So I just think for Edmonton, hey, get off on the right note. And I think it's a little more important for them, but I just think that their mental approach this time around is better than it was a year ago.
Talking to Jonathan Davis, our very own hockey expert here at VEASAN. Game one has a 6.5 total. It is shaded a little bit towards the under there in this one. Jonathan, do we expect a bunch of goals tonight?
Yeah, I mean, look, I chop around as always on the total because I think there are some sixes at around minus 115, minus 120. I find that in game one, when both teams especially have had a longer layoff, we get some sloppier play. So I mean, if I was to make a play either way, it would be to the over. You know, Stuart Skinner, the Oilers goalie, not as sharp in the earlier games than he is in the latter stages once you get to game four. I do want to make one point, though. Last year when, you know, everyone talks about Florida having the big advantage in net, Bobrovsky better than Skinner. Last year in the playoffs, Skinner actually had a better save percentage than Sergei Bobrovsky did, despite the Panthers winning that series in seven games.
Wow, okay, that's a good one. I was going to ask you, are there any other storylines that you feel like are not being talked about nearly enough as we head into the Stanley Cup final. I know it's really easy to focus on a rematch from last year, but is there anything under the radar that could maybe lead to some prop bets or anything, Jonathan, that you're looking at?
Well, I mean, look, I think that, you know, a couple of guys that I would watch for Evander Kane and Corey Perry for the Edmonton Oilers. Corey Perry's, you know, 40 years old and still buzzing along. He's tied for the team lead in goals with 7. I would look to Corey Perry, you know, to get at least 2 goals in the playoffs, you know, plays, get some time on the top line, plays in the number one power play unit. He is a rat, as he will freely admit out there on the ice. And Evander Kane, you know, with Zach Hyman of the Oilers out for the playoffs, his role gets elevated. He missed all of the regular season, and he's looked really good in the playoffs. This is the type of series for him, or I think for the Edmonton side, that he benefits. And then on the Florida side, you know, pay attention to Carter Verhaeghe. Outside of Leon Draisaitl, no player has scored more goals over the last 3 years in the playoffs than Leon Draisaitl. Carter Verhaeghe second in goals scored. So he's one that I would be paying attention to.
If you have a strong conviction on either one of these teams, is a sweep even in the realm of possibility, or this thing being done in 5, even in the realm of possibility, in your opinion, where people can go in and get a really juicy price on one of these two teams?
Well, I immediately bet Edmonton -1.5, and I'm now looking at, I would even look, you know, definitely betting Edmonton in 6. 5 wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think it would be 5, you know, that, you know, that one team over, you know, thoroughly dominated the other, and that's why we had a very short series. I don't see 4. I just think these two teams are too close. But look, the one thing that I routinely play, guys, is -1.5 goals for both teams. 11 straight playoff games have been decided by 2 goals or more. 20 of the last 22 have been decided by 2 goals or more. 15 of the 17 Florida games have been decided by 2 goals or more. 11 of the 16 Edmonton games have been decided by 2 goals or more. So, hey, I keep playing -1.5 both ways. You're going to get a profit, you know, as long as that hits, you're going to get a profit for sure.
Anything else you're looking at for game 1, Jonathan, player props or anything else that you've made along those lines for tonight?
Yeah, there are definitely some anytime goal scores, you know, and also, guys, the other market that I've also started to get into is first goal and last goal. Connor Brown of the Edmonton Oilers has scored the last goal of the game 4 times. Twice that's been an empty net goal. So he's out there towards the end of the game. Same thing for Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers. 4 times he has scored the last goal of the game, and twice it's been an empty net. So those are ones that I touched upon in the article today. If they hit, I mean, you're going to make a pretty penny on it. You're getting, I think, close to 25-1, if I remember correctly, on both of those. So, hey, all they got to do is hit once to make a profit.
He is Jonathan Davis. Find his work over on VSiN.com at West Coast HKY on the Twitter machine as well. Jonathan, I know this is a great day for you up there. I'm pumped up for you, buddy, and I hope you get exactly what you need. Good luck on all the bets.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Take care.
Now we're going to be talking some Belmont here in the next segment.
That's
Kelly.
Right.
So if people want to bet along with not only Chris Felica, who will be joining us, but Mike Somich, are all the guests that will be talking horse racing between now and when the Belmont goes off. You can do that over at First Bet. You head over to 1stbet.com. When you go in, you can sign up over there. And not only, we talk about this all the time, right, Kelly, that you can bet in the app, but also you can sit there and watch the races right in the app as well. We're also running a contest. So VSiN.com/Belmont. And when you head on over there, you're going to get in with our friends over at First Bet. And it's a pick'em challenge. So enter your picks for Saturday's races to win prize up to a $500 wagering voucher as well from firstbet.com. So all kinds of great stuff going on with them. VSiN.com/Belmont if you want to get in on that contest right there. You know, one thing that I will have to ask at another point, Kelly, is the difference between first goal scorer and anytime goal scorer. Like massive differences, right? So like if you look at some of these guys, like, you know, Draisaitl's 9-1 first goal scorer, but 110 anytime, 10-1 McDavid. It's kind of like the first touchdown, anytime touchdown type of deal.
I was trying to think what the kind of price split is on those.
And I'm wondering if there's any reason to ever bet first goal scorer as opposed to anytime goal scorer.
I don't know. When
what
it
if
comes,
you think if you think it's like a really low scoring game anyway, then wouldn't you just bet first goal score? Because what if it's only 1-0?
I mean, whether we're talking touchdowns or this, I think you always got to sprinkle at least that, right? At least.
Yeah, get you like a little 90-10 split going on there. Belmont and much more with Chris Felica when we come back.